Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm your host, Gwen Garcelon. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Because these are times that are asking us to evolve beyond the systems and paradigms that are collapsing. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. My guest today is Anders Carlson. Anders went to Colorado Rocky Mountain School here in Carbondale. And after some time away from the Roaring Fork Valley, he's now calling it home and passionate about stewarding this land. He's an organizer at 13 Moons Ranch, where he co-hosts the annual Mountain Heart Men's Ceremony. And he's working on a film about the reintroduction of wolves to Colorado called As Wolves Return. Welcome. Thanks for having this conversation with me, Anders.
Oh, Gwen, it's so great to be here with you. I'm really just loving the opportunity to show up and speak and be vulnerable on the radio in this beautiful community that I love so much.
Oh, this is the place. This is the place for that. You know, I always love hearing people's spiritual origin stories, and I wonder if you can describe your early memories and influences in your spiritual life.
Yeah, so growing up, I was born in Santa Cruz, California, and I was raised in a little bit of an untraditional way. My mother homeschooled me, and so my early memories are of climbing redwood trees and just being a young human in connection with nature. And I think that's what's continued to lead to my love for the environment, environmental causes, and my connection with this place that we currently are so blessed to live in.
Mm. Do you remember any sort of pivotal moments or experiences where you're like, wow, okay, I'm really feeling my connection with spirit and I can articulate it that way, and, you know, that were particularly, you know, significant to you?
Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to feel into kind of how far back that I can look into the mists of my memory. But what comes to mind is an experience that I had in South Dakota on horseback, and being part of a group of young riders riding from South Dakota to Montana, and the feeling of meeting a creature, this horse named Roy in this case, and us sort of feeling into each other's energy and our nerves. And this was a Greenbroke horse, and so what that means is that the cowboy made a relationship with his horse, and yet it's still a little bit wild. And so they said, hey, let's put this kid on this Greenbroke horse and hopping on and starting to feel that direct connection with the spirit of this horse. Mm. And that flow of maintaining my seat and not falling off the saddle and letting go of control. So it was this paradox of surrender and like squeeze, hold on. And so that experience over the course of a couple of weeks, I had a bond with this horse, and at the end of it, you know, we were both transformed by the journey, and there was a certain amount of surrender and mystery and getting lost out in the woods with a group of people that really tuned me into my own being and my connection to others in a very unique way. We were kind of out of the context of normal everyday life.
Yeah. It's amazing how that can happen in the natural world through animals or trees or the river. You know, it's such a metaphor for our human existence, I feel like. You know, that need to stay grounded, you know, stay here, stay alive, but also to surrender to all of the greater forces that support us. That's so beautiful. I'd love to talk a little bit about the film that you're working on, and sort of how that originated. You know, like where did the idea come from? Where were the beginnings of that?
Yeah, so tied into the story of South Dakota and horseback rides is a good friend of mine, Tara Sheehan, who was a longtime fixture in the Valley, a very spiritual human being. And so with her, we've been working on bringing the buffalo back as a keystone species. And so the buffalo is one of my totems. I love how the buffalo faces the storm. And actually, in moments like this, where we're sitting here in this studio, I find for me, when I'm going through a chapter in my life where the page is turning, the weather is like super interesting. And so today it's been raining, it's been snowing, it's been sunny. And I'm just like, okay, what an incredible moment to go sit with Gwen at KDNK and, you know, bear certain elements of my soul to share with my community. So it actually happened at a men's group where I met this doctor who is a local in the Valley. He's a functional medicine doctor. And we began to just chat about life and whatnot. And we realized we both knew this same person, Tara. And, you know, we got talking about what's going on in this area ecologically and spiritually. And so his work was with the story of the wolf. And so that was the initial seed. There was a collaboration, there was a spark and a connection with this particular individual, and a shared vision that over time, I kind of realized that our visions weren't quite aligned on the subject, and that I was after kind of a broader picture of what's going on here. And so I've been hesitant to share publicly about this project because I feel the nerves of it, stepping out and speaking on a controversial issue, because I have friends who are ranchers. I have friends who are conservationists, and I'm a spiritual person. I'm an intellectual person. And so I did a bunch of research on the subject matter. And then I came to this point where I was like, I just have to throw all of this away, because that will only take me so far as my intellectual understanding of ecosystem biology and trophic cascades and all of these things that we're learning about through science, right? Because when you get to someone's lived experience that doesn't resonate with that, that's just a dead end. So I had to humble myself and sort of take a step back. And so when people ask me, you know, where is the project at? You know, I've hit a lot of roadblocks, and I think that's really emblematic of this issue and the sort of broken trust between parties that are involved in the return of the wolf. And there's just so many layers to it that I felt incredibly kind of conflicted. And how do I hold all of this in a way that honors not only the land, the wolves, but the broad, diverse perspectives of our local community, which I think is just so beautiful to live here, right? Where we have, you know, we have the rodeo and we have our cowboys and we have cattle drives through town. And, you know, and then we also have incredible scientific and ecological organizations here, like Wilderness Workshop and the Rocky Mountain Institute. And so we're blessed to live in such an interesting place. And so I've really had to reexamine my own biases in terms of what do I believe to be true, and knowing that there's like 50 shades of gray at least.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because this isn't a black and white issue. There's so much gray area, and even though it may seem so polarized. And I wanted you to speak to maybe sort of both sides. Like, if there were something you've learned about the potential of having wolves on the landscape, that really moves you or that is sort of new to you through this, what would that be? And then I'm going to ask you to speak from the other side as well.
Hmm.
Just for the folks who may mm-hmm. not have dug into this quite as much, I want them to have some perspective, especially the perspective of someone who's really been looking at it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, totally. Thank you for that good question. And what I've been, you know, diving into and learning about in deep conversations with folks like Dee Malone, who is a beautiful human being, who I consider to be like our local Jane Goodall, who's dedicated her life to working with nature, doing all sorts of different scientific stream bed health studies. And
she's the head of the local Sierra Club chapter, mm-hmm. right, among other things.
Yeah. Yeah. And so through deep conversations with her, you know, learning about the ecological aspects of what a keystone species means and what that kind of entails is there's this web of life, which I think a lot of us have heard about. And when you start to remove characters from the story, we'll say there's more impacts than we can possibly know, even as incredibly intelligent, scientific, logical human beings. And so as I'm receiving all of this, I'm also feeling her bias in how she talks about other people, who have different perspectives. And so, you know, I guess I'm looking forward to the day that I get to be, in the room with discussions between folks like this, who both have an incredible depth of experience, whether that's, you know, through science and activism or through ranching and agriculture.
So that understanding is, you know, an ecosystem understanding that, you know, we have as human beings picked apart the ecosystem so that it's no longer functioning. Like if in our bodies, you know, if we took out our heart or our lungs or our liver, you know, things don't work so well. And that's important, you know, in ecosystems. So looking from another perspective of, you know, the fears that people have and economic impacts to ranchers, et cetera, you know, is there something in there that was surprising for you that's a new perspective that you've gained?
Yeah. So I was actually having a conversation with a high school friend of mine who works for, she's like the liaison for the agricultural community. And so I went to visit her one day and we were having a conversation, and it was something to the effect of when I said ranchers and conservationists being two different things, she was like, whoa, 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 I'm gonna have to stop you there. Ranchers are conservationists. And so that was one of those moments that really challenged me and kind of expanded my perspective, because if we think about this place that we live in and who are the stewards of the green space that's around us, that becomes a really interesting kind of contemplation, right? Because that balance between how many people can live here and our interactions with nature, that's kind of managed by our ranching community who steward these lands. And there's so much more there that I'm curious about, in terms of that lived experience. But I have spent a couple days out there with my friends, the Fails, who are intergenerational, multi-generational ranching family. And just to walk around when the calves are being born and just witnessing that, those moments of creation out there, and seeing these cute little creatures be born and the care with which a steward of these animals is paying attention. You know, has a little notebook that has all the numbers in there, and you're like, oh, this one needs a little extra love or whatever, you know. And we came across one that had splints, this little newborn calf that had splints on its front legs because of whatever its birth situation was. So just seeing that like direct connection to creation and to the land that folks have who live in that way was just super expanding. And like I said, just kind of ignited my curiosity for more. I'm like, I want to learn about irrigation and, you know, how this whole process works. And then as a result of that, like, I'm also learning what isn't working.
Yeah. That's so funny. It brings us back to, you know, listening to you with those, you know, different perspectives. We're all in this together. You know, there's no us and them. There's just us. And we all care. You know, so many of us care so deeply. And just in different ways, with different needs, with different backgrounds. And it's so important to include it all.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And an interesting kind of, you know, again, when people ask me how the Wolf Film Project's going, it's been full of detours and side quests,
yeah,
as I like to say. And so something about this process and my lack of being able to intellectually, you know, think my way through to a solution and convince people that that's the way. Mm. I found myself in a community mediation class with a law professor with 40 years of experience, who's a rector at a church. And this mediation class is called Peacemaking in Community. And so it's been incredibly powerful to do all these role plays of, like, sometimes I'm the landlord, sometimes I'm the tenant, sometimes I'm the mediator trying to find that middle ground. And yet having the subtlety and the nuance to be able to understand the different human beings who you're sitting with is like, it feels like it's a science combined with an art. Mm. To be able to hold, you know, different people's life experiences, communication styles,
yeah,
and all of this, hold my bias out of it, and then be really listening, really good, so that you can understand where the common ground lies.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So, well, just to take a quick break here, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Anders Carlson, and we're talking about nature and our spiritual paths. And really, it's all, it feels more and more to me these days that we are at a place of needing to make and being supported to make a quantum leap in our human consciousness, in our reorienting ourselves as spiritual beings, and that this is a spiritual reality that we are operating within. And whether it's, you know, in community mediation, you know, realizing how much our own personal and spiritual growth is what makes or breaks that. It's not an intellectual endeavor. You know, it's about how do we connect to each other and listen for what our priorities maybe should be right now.
Mm, I love that. That's super beautiful. And I would like to also just put in there that connection with self is perhaps something that needs to precede the connection with the everything. And that's been part of my journey with meditation and yoga, mm, embodiment, yeah, recently with an incredible teacher, Allison, out at 13 Moons, doing this somatic Kundalini style yoga, where there's something in the body and the way the body stores unprocessed emotions or traumas that we've all experienced. And so just diving deeply into the nature of myself and looking at my relationship to pain and discomfort has been super fruitful recently. Yeah.
Well, I want to hear more about your work in the men's movement, you know, and what's been positive for you about, you know, the potential of liberating men from that rigid masculine stereotype, because it feels to me like that's an important piece of this cultural evolution that we're making right now, is embodying our feminine and masculine in a much more whole and fluid way. And I'd just love to hear about your experience with that work.
Mm.
Wherever you want to start.
Yeah. I guess I have to give a shout out to my father, Rick. He was engaging in men's work back in the 80s. And so, you know, he started to do that work to look at himself, as a, we'll say prerequisite to being with, my mother, who was like, you need to do a little something.
You need to sort yourself out.
You need to sort yourself out. And so he did. And they've been together for, I don't know, 40 years now.
Beautiful.
And so, yeah, I just have to thank, you know, those who have come before, whether I know them or not. Men and women have been gathering around the fire for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And so it feels like a coming back home in that way, and a remembrance of our original humanness, to gather together in a ceremonial container. And what that means is that there's a threshold that we cross when we enter an experience where we're leaving behind our usual programming, our usual world, and we're dropping into presence with a group of people. And it feels kind of like a roller coaster ride where you sign up and you, and I'll speak for myself and my sort of co-organizers, but we put in, you know, months and months of work to create this experience, and then it's a roller coaster ride and there's some unexpected twists and turns. And that's what we like to call ceremony, is we're like, we have our schedule written out, but we don't know what kind of things are going to shift up last minute. And so, yeah, each year there's been, you know, one person or a father son combo that has made the whole thing worth it. And there's, you know, so many more beautiful moments that occur, but, you know, we got to send off a young 14-year-old to his study abroad year, and he got to have 3 days with his father surrounded by, four generations of men in presence, in ceremony, in connection, and all these wild different kinds of exercises, cold plunge, sweat lodge. And so just as a kind of rites of passage for that young man, like, that made the whole thing worth it for me.
I'd love to hear you talk about that, because it's something, you know, as a single mom, I had, not much opportunity to do for my son. But I realize as time goes on, how important this is for both, you know, young women and men to go through some kind of a rites of passage. And you find that people who maybe haven't had a, you know, kind of a coming of age challenge, you know, it just looks so different these days in our culture. But I'd love for you to say what you observe as the real benefits of that in someone's development.
Yeah, absolutely. What a good question. The experience that comes to mind is at the men's gathering, we all lined up arm in arm with a partner. And then we walked all together into the Crystal River where we were cold plunging. And I looked over to see a friend of mine who's my age. I'm 37 years old. So we call him like the young uncle energy. And so to see him co-regulating his nervous system with our youngest participant, who was, I believe, 12 or 13 at the time, I was like, that's it right there. Like, learning to face adversity with someone there who's got you is just so beautiful. And, you know, I'm trying to think back, you know, in my life, what would have, you know, held that space for me. And I really, you know, feel like that there was an opportunity there, you know.
Beautiful. If people want to find Mountain Heart, how would they go about that or get involved with that?
Yeah. So we're on Instagram as Mountain Heart Men's Ceremony. So you can reach out to us there. And yeah, we're going to be opening the wait list for the event that's going to be coming up this August. We're going to announce some more information soon. You can also shoot us an email at mountainheartmen133@gmail.com.
So that's all spelled out. Mountain Heart Men's. Just want to make sure people have that so they can reach you about that.
Yeah. Sorry. Here we go. It is, it's Mountain Heart 133. So MountainHeart133 at gmail.com.
Great. So just at ending up here, I always love to know what's a growth edge that you're engaging with right now that's really serving you in your own expansion service.
Yeah. The growth edge was at Mountain Heart. This last year I became a facilitator. The first year I was an organizer, so kind of behind the scenes making things happen. And then the second year I put together a workshop offering that had been, I don't know, probably a 7 or 8 year journey for me. And it's something that people know me for, which are my hugs. And so to take, you know, what I feel like is a gift of being human, right? Is that connection. And then turning that into an experience to teach men, how to slow down, how to be in their bodies, how to understand pressure. Because a lot of men, they think a good hug is like, I'm going to break your back, you know? And I'm like, and I tell people often, I'm like, careful, don't hurt me. And I'm strong, but you know, it's
not a competition.
Yeah. It's about that. It's about that subtlety and that perception and kind of slowing things down. So, you know, amidst the adrenaline and the excitement of the edge, taking that deep breath and slowing it down.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Aunt Anders. This has been a great, great conversation. You can find The Inner Game on Apple Podcasts and on the KDNK.org website and on my website, GwenGarSalon.com, for all my other offerings. This music is Awake by Peter Mayer. Until next time, dive deep, hug someone a long time.
Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling.